Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
WGN, Ken Smith with you tonight. Jordan, are you still there?
I'm here.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you.
How are you?
I'm very good. Did I just hear you say that the Cubs tied the game and then Craig Kimbrell blew it in the 10th?
You did hear me say that, yeah. They scored three in the 9th. They showed resilience. They were coming back. And then Kimbrell served up a monster homer to Matt Carpenter, and they lose 5-4.
When I was in the newsroom with you earlier, they were mounting a rally, and I left. Because I told you, I said, every time I watch a Cubs game, I don't see him score a run. So I'm going to leave. And so I left, and they came back.
But did you come in the 10th? I don't understand.
No, I want to say it was maybe the 7th or the 8th.
Right, but I'm saying they gave up the homer in the 10th. Maybe you just popped in and I didn't notice. And
I glanced at the TV screen in the 10th. See, that's how I know it's not going to happen for the Cubs. When you're going to have a magical year, you end up winning games like tonight. You end up winning games like last night. They're losing these comeback games now.
Yeah.
And these extra inning games.
They seem decimated. Right? Like, Baez came into pinch run, but hasn't played because he's hurt. Rizzo is hurt and heroically at a home run tonight, but their pitching is older and unreliable, and it's just yuck.
And like I was telling you, I turned the game on the other day, and I thought I was watching spring training. It was like Caratini at first, Bodie at second.
Yeah,
Ian Happ, the new kid at short. I mean, it's... hopefully, I mean, there's still 2 weeks left in the season. And,
Nine games, man. That's it.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
And they can't be losing these games to the Cardinals. That's just it.
No. I think it's one thing to not make the playoffs. It's going to hurt extra for Cubs fans if they don't make the playoffs and it's because of the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes, that will hurt even more than the Brewers.
Oh, I think way more, because I think the true rivalry is the Cardinals. The Brewers have been the last couple of years,
yeah.
But I mean, tonight felt like a playoff game, and man, that is just, and they've lost three in a row, and you got 9 left, and as it stands now, they're 4 out of first, and they're a game back of the second wild card. So if the playoffs started today,
so they're out now. Yeah. So they've got to really. They got to win 7 out of their next 9 at least, and they got to win everything against the Cardinals.
Oh, God.
Maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later. Thank you, Jordan. We'll talk to you in a bit. 720 WGN, thanks for joining me tonight. Ken Smith with you. Got a lot of stuff going on. I want to say hello to my producer, Mike. How you doing, brother?
Hey, good to see you, Ken.
Good to see you. Are you hungry?
I'm starving.
You tonight. Always are. You said to me last week that you're a huge fast food fan, which... endeared me to you immediately.
Well, yeah, after we tried the Impossible Burger from Burger King, it's something about it. I just love a good fast food.
Today is Talk Like a Pirate Day. And had you gone to Long John Silver's today and talked like a pirate, you would have gotten a free piece of fish. And if you dressed up like a pirate and went to Long John Silver's, you would have gotten like a free like fish basket.
Wow, really?
Now,
I can't believe I didn't have this marked down on my calendar.
I don't know if this happens to you, but whenever I go into a fast food restaurant with some type of off-the-cuff deal or coupon, mm-hmm. they look at me like I'm a cyclops. They look at me like I have one eye in the middle of my head.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They have no idea what I'm talking about. Now, I went online and went, okay, so how many Long John Silvers are there? There's one on the north side of Chicago. There's one in, like, Downers Grove. And there's one at, like, 76th and Stony Island.
Jeez.
So I'm wondering, if I go to the Long John Silvers at 76th and Stony Island, dressed like a pirate... telling them I'm supposed to get a free fish basket. What do I think is going to happen? Do you think they're going to go, oh, yes, sir, congratulations. Yeah, you get a free fish basket because it's dressed like a, it's Talk Like a Pirate Day and dressed like a pirate day.
We've been waiting for you all day.
We've been waiting
finally,
for you all
you
day.
It.
We got memos from corporate. We've been waiting for this moment. I don't think so.
No. So you, I'm saying, I'm getting that you did not do this today.
I did not do this today. I did not get a chance to go there today because I knew we were going to be having pizza in today. So I was trying to save some stomach room for the pizza.
Okay. No, that's a smart move. That's, yeah, that's good. And I haven't been to a Long John Silver's since 10 plus years.
Oh, yeah. They're disappearing. Mm-hmm. And I love Long John Silver's. I love the fish. I love the chicken. I love the hush puppies. I love the little crispy things that are at the bottom of the plate that I think is just probably just burnt crust that fell off into the fryer. Mm-hmm. And they just put it on there and say that it's part of your meal. I love all that stuff. I love Long John Silver's. So if I had an opportunity to go there today and get talk like a pirate and get a free piece of fish, I don't have any pirate clothing at the crib. So if I had just maybe put a patch over my eye and tied like a bandana around my neck, do you think that that would have done it? Maybe loosen a couple of buttons on the shirt.
You could have done that, walked with like a limp, like a peg leg.
That's
limp,
well.
That,
well, I pretty much walk with a limp anyway. So that would have been yes, peg leg.
Brought in a bottle of rum or something.
Put a parrot on my shoulder. Yeah. Rented a parrot from the pet store.
You know, you're going through a lot of work for just a free.
It's a
bucket
lot
of fish.
It's a lot of work for some free fish, but don't put it past me. Don't put it past me. I wonder if anybody went to Long John Silver's today and got the free fish. I'd love to hear about that because who knows? 312-981-7200. Call me or text me. I want to know if you were able to get your free fish at Long John Silver's today because you spoke like a pirate or talked like a pirate. Because they always whenever I went to a place the other day about a month ago, I had a coupon. And I went, yeah, I've got a coupon here for buy one, get one free. And they go, yeah, we don't honor that. I'm like, what do you mean you don't honor that? It's right here. Yeah, we don't honor that. All righty then. I drove halfway across town so I could get this buy one, get one free. And now you don't honor it. And I still ended up spending $25 at the place. So I guess who's the dummy? Me. And they got exactly what they wanted out of me, which was for me to buy something. Wait a minute. Hold on. Patrick wants to talk about the batter. He wants to talk about the batter at the bottom of the basket. You talk about niche programming here. Patrick wants to talk about the batter at the bottom of the basket of Long John Silver's. How you doing, Patrick?
Super, buddy. I'm 49 years old and been going to Long John Silver since it's been open in Chicagoland area.
Right.
And I had a sister at one time that worked there and told us the secret is literally just throwing handfuls of batter into the fryer. And because people ask for, so can I get extra batter?
They want those little crispies.
Yes, that's extra batter. And they'll give you a little cardboard tray, like 2 by 3. You know, 2 inches by 3 inches, and I'll fill it up with the batter for you. So I know this because I am a batter freak, and I've asked for extra batter before.
Well, wait a minute. You can actually go to Long John Silver's and get a serving of batter?
Yes. Yes. So it's basically fried batter, you know, nice greasy fry. If it's good, if it's fresh grease, it's actually really good. But when it's dirty, old, nasty grease, those things are...
I love it.
I love me some chicken and fish from there, and like you said, the hush puppies. It's all good.
And the hush puppies.
There is one out in Barrington. Hanover Park or Shopreach, like on Irving Park, and a little bit west of the Elgin O'Hare.
Yeah, there's only a handful of them now. There's maybe like three or four in the Chicago area now. You know, so I sure. Patrick, we're gonna have to go out to Long John Silver's and get some batter one night.
Yes, sir.
All right, buddy.
Take care.
Take it easy. 720 WGN. Keeping with the food theme, we've got the Chicago Pizza Summit. A pizza summit in Chicago? Does Chicago need a pizza summit? What is a pizza summit? You're going to find out next. This is 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Ken Smith with you tonight until 1 a.m. And we're going to have to hold off on the pizza for a minute, because we have a very special guest here in studio. You've seen her on Last Comic Standing. Remember the show One Big Happy on NBC? She was on One Big Happy on NBC. Tours around the country. She's at Zany's this week. It's Rebecca Corey. How you doing, Rebecca?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. What a beautiful studio.
Isn't it great? Have you had a chance? Look at the view here in the Skyline studio here at WGN.
No, it's serious. I used to live here in Chicago. I used to live down at City Front, the round by Navy Pier.
Like Lake Point Tower?
Yes.
Okay.
No, not that tower. The two that look, this, there's a water fountain that shoots out the side.
Oh, so like River West.
Yes.
Where when did you live there?
I moved away 18 years ago, but I lived here for...
Was the Baja Beach Club still over there?
It was. Is that still going?
I probably kept you awake until 4 in the morning if you were... The Baja Beach Club has been closed for a while.
I figured that was going to happen.
Okay, yeah, but there's something in... I think there's like bocce ball is in there, okay. And there's some other things in there now, but...
This is beautiful.
This is incredible.
Oh, my God.
And you can look... So, from where we're standing, sitting... We can look to the north, and you can see the NBC Tower.
Is that the NBC Tower right there?
That's the NBC Tower right there.
Okay, I used to do warm-up for the Jenny Jones Show.
Did you really?
I sure did for 2 years.
Nice.
Jerry Springer taped right next door across the hall.
They all taped there. Jerry Springer taped there. Jenny Jones taped there. Who else used to tape there?
Well, those are the only two talk shows that I remember.
We used to have our national... NABJ, National Association of Black Journalists, monthly meeting would be basically in the Springer studio.
Okay.
So we'd be on like the Springer set, sitting in the chairs having like our meeting. This is like in the 90s.
That's right. That's when I was there in the 90s before I left.
Jenny Jones. I mean, that's going back. And now you see what Springer's doing now these days, right?
Wait, I just recently saw him. Doesn't he have a show again?
He's Judge Jerry now.
What?
He's Judge Jerry.
Wait, is he really a judge?
Of course not.
Oh.
Of course not. But he's adjudicating.
Oh, my goodness.
So I guess people are going in front of him, so he's now got his own judge show. He is Judge Jerry now.
Oh, Jerry.
But no more, unless there's a chair throwing there.
Oh, are they still throwing?
I don't know. That was the golden age of Jerry Springer when they were throwing the chairs.
Yep.
And every other word was bleeped out. Uh-huh. That was must-see TV back in the day.
And Jenny had her fair share of nonsense. Do you remember the infamous murder?
Yeah, that's kind of what brought her down, right? Because she brought on a secret crush, right?
A secret crush. You know what's going on.
Well,
but let me tell you something. That shot her star even higher.
Well, it's publicity that you can't buy.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. So she had a secret. Here comes your secret crush.
Oh.
And no, not you, Rebecca. Not right now. Maybe a little bit later in the show. But it was another guy.
Yep.
And then, so I guess the guy freaked out and a few months later ended up killing the guy.
That's right.
But I was on the Jenny Jones Show with a bunch of WCW wrestlers.
What
like
year?
Like Scott Steiner, and this would have probably been early 2000.
Oh, I was gone.
Yeah, like early 2000.
I left in 98, I think.
Left in 98?
Yep. Moved to L.A.
When I moved out to L.A.?
Yep.
But the good old Jenny Jones Show days, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually where I first, because she was never happy with how her hair looked. So,
started off as a stand-up comedian,
right? Yeah? She sure did. Yeah. Yep. And, I guess that's what she did. And so I would be left out in the studio to entertain the studio audience for sometimes 2 hours in a day. And
oh, wow.
I started learning how to kind of, because at first I went through the Second City training program. I went and studied at Second City. I never got into Second City.
Well, I want to talk to you about that and some of the other things that you did in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got a break for news. This week, Chicago's Best is dedicated to making your early mornings easier. Pour yourself a cup of coffee and get ready for Chicago's Best Breakfast Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Rebecca Corey is at Zany's this week. She's got a lot going on. And as she said, you know, she was at Second City. I want to know what happened here at Second City and what happened when she went to LA and what's going on this week at Zany's. It's maybe something that you don't expect. We'll talk to Rebecca in just a second after the news. It's a 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Ken Smith with you until 1 a.m. We're here with Rebecca Corey. She is at Zany's. She's got a fundraiser coming up at Zany's downtown Chicago on Wells Street on Sunday that we're going to talk about in just a second. You were talking about how you lived here in Chicago for 9, 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years.
Okay, and you used to do warm up for Jenny Jones.
I did.
And you said you went to Second City.
I studied there. I went through their training program. I auditioned to try to get into one of the touring programs, and as we say in the biz, they did a hard pass.
Oh no.
But
you would have ended up on a cruise ship anyway, so.
Well, you know, back in the day, that was coveted, you know, and I still think it is.
And it still is coveted. I don't mean to bust Second City, but I'm just saying you could have ended up on a cruise ship.
Maybe. Yeah. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, you know, improvising games, like getting I'm not great. I'll be honest. I'm not great at that game thing. And like,
right.
I'm just not. Like, I was always fascinated with the people that I got to watch perform because I was like, how good are you? Like, in the moment, you get the suggestion and you can just go with it. I was always in awe, and therefore I was taken out of the scene because I was not paying attention and I was...
You're busy spectating. You should have had a ticket and been sitting in the audience.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's not easy. I've taken a couple of classes at Improv Olympic. I took some classes with Sharna.
Uh-huh.
Sharna Halperin, who runs Improv Olympic and did with Del Close for so many years.
Yeah.
And she said I was good at it, which is great. It's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
But you have to be really quick-witted to do that.
I'm
in radio, so I'm the opposite of quick-witted. I'm absolutely dumb-witted. But
no, stand-up is what I love.
But stand-up is not easy either. I mean, you have to be fearless doing stand-up. What made and you're what are you 5'1", 5'2" on your best day?
Let me tell you something. If you're trying to flatter me, sir, it is working because I am 4'11".
Wow.
Yeah. For real.
Wow.
For real. For reals.
You've probably been 4'11" since you were in fourth grade. Right.
Well, I mean, that went a little too. I would say, about fifth grade.
Okay, about fifth grade.
Yeah.
So, what makes a 4'11" young lady decide to do stand up comedy for a living?
Well, that's a really long. That's a documentary film.
Okay, fair enough.
But I would say, you know, I mean, it's. I think comedy. I can't watch anything I've ever done. Like, some of my early year stuff is, it's all unwatchable. It's just unwatchable.
To you, maybe.
Well.
To you, maybe.
I relied more on physicality than material.
Okay.
And you kind of grow into your voice. You kind of, like, learn as time goes on. But you eat it big time and do a lot of humiliating stuff.
Boy, there's
a lot of that.
You know, going on. Have you watched what's the Pete Holmes show on HBO?
Crashing. I have watched that.
Okay, it feels like it's dead on. If you've never seen this show before, it's called Crashing on HBO, and it's Pete Holmes, who is the opposite of Rebecca Corey because he's about 6'6".
Uh-huh.
But it's about him breaking into comedy in New York, and it's so uncomfortable to watch sometimes.
Yeah.
It looks too real to me. Is that the way it is when you're starting off?
I understand why you feel that way, and it is. It's that way. It can be that way still. You know, sometimes comedy is uncomfortable, especially if you're being really honest. It can be uncomfortable, but I love it because it's I guess kind of like painting, you know, it's immediate gratification. Like if you're eating it, you know it.
You know it immediately.
If you're doing well and you feel good about what you're doing and saying, and you're kind of creating in the moment and exploring within that space, it feels really great. There's nothing like it. But there's also nothing like eating it, too.
It can't be easy getting up in front of a room full of strangers and trying to make them laugh consistently.
I mean,
is there a quick answer to why you got into it?
I guess it's my point of view. It's the way that I view the world, and I have a mouth, so I use it and express how I view the world. And sometimes what I say or think or feel, it comes off as funny and maybe something that people can relate to, you know, or understand, or a different point of view that they never thought of. And I don't know. The world is a... This is no one gets off this thing alive.
Sure,
we're all on this. We're on this ship together.
Right.
And you know, you see it the way that you see it. You know, the way I was brought up, the way I was raised, I see it and view it a certain way. And what, for whatever reason, it led me to doing it. And I just love it.
Did you used to perform for your parents or in school or something like that?
I was the idiot class clown for sure.
Okay,
detention and just idiot. Loved laughing, loved making people laugh and all that. But, you know, doing stand-up comedy is it's a legit art form. Like, you know, it takes work and practice.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
So I wasn't ever really, I still get nervous. You know, I think if you stop getting nervous, that's kind of weird. But I never really watched comedy. It was never really a thing I thought about doing or whatever. It was more acting or improv.
So you didn't have...
No comedy background whatsoever.
What about influences growing up?
None.
Really?
I loved Lucille Ball, loved Carol Burnett.
So you really were more into the physical comedy.
Oh,
I mean, because that's because they're the masters of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then when, you know, SNL, too, I was watching SNL, Sherry O'Terry and Molly Shannon and, you know, all of those. I loved those women. And I also loved black male comedians were my favorite. Like, I loved Martin Lawrence. I loved his comedy so much.
Really?
Loved. And Eddie Murphy, loved. And
is Eddie Murphy coming back? That's the rumor, that he's going to do a Netflix special.
Probably. Wasn't he just in Riding Cars with Jerry?
He did do Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Yeah. So, he probably is, and he should.
Well, because they can pay him $25 million.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
But he's also I love the storytelling comedians, and, you know, I love physical comedy. It's, my favorite. So, anyways, I was doing a lot of physical comedy in my stand-up, and I was like, that's why it's unwatchable at this point.
And when you were in Chicago,
yeah,
you were in Tony and Tina's wedding?
I was. What? Did you Google that? I was in Tony and Tina's wedding for...
Circa what Tony and Tina's wedding? Where was it at? Was it the
Piper's Alley.
It was the Piper's Alley. So this was the beginning of Tony and Tina's.
I was the first cast. Did all the parades.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Who'd you play in Tony and Tina's wedding?
Connie McConey, the pregnant maid of honor.
Okay.
did you ever see it?
Every time I'm supposed to have gone to see Tony and Tina's wedding about four times now,
and
I still haven't made it.
It's still going?
It's still, okay. As of last year, it was playing at a church in Wrigleyville around the corner from Sheffield's, like off of School Street. There's a church. And it was playing in that church.
An actual church.
Yes, it was playing in an actual church.
And it's still going now.
I don't know if at this moment, as we speak, if it is still going on. But as of a year ago or 18 months ago, it was still going on. Yes.
That's insane.
It is like a cockroach. It will not die.
And, you know, tickets are expensive.
Blue Man Group is still going on.
No.
Yes.
No, it's not.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. That's insane. It's like you haven't been in Chicago in 15 years. You can come here and still see Blue Man Group, Tony and Tina's Wedding, yeah. And that the Dean Martin, either the Rat Pack, and there was also the one where it's like Jerry Lee Lewis and Johnny Cash, One Night Only, and
Are
Elvis
you serious?
Presley. It's still, it's always playing.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I did like 300 shows. I did like 300.
Million Dollar Quartet. That's what it's called. Yeah.
Million Dollar Quartet.
Yes, yes.
Interesting. Where's you that did... playing? I did like 300. You know, it was seven. Well, there were two shows, I think, on Sunday, and it was every single night of the week. It was.
How did you
And
do
I think
it?
I did it for. I got to count how many shows I did, but it was outrageous because I was in the show for like over a year.
Wow.
Yeah. I did so many shows. It was literally unbearable. And you know what sucks so...
No, most people be like, I loved it. It was the best time of my life. And you're like, it was unbearable.
And what sucked is that it was in Piper's Alley. It was above Second City where I wanted...
Where you wanted to be.
Yeah. Like, you know, at the time on Main Stage when I was doing Tony and Tina's Wedding, Main Stage, Tina Fey,
yeah.
Steve Carell, Colbert, Amy Sedaris, Mitch Rouse, all those guys were on Main Stage, and I'm in a pregnant maid of honor costume, eating spaghetti, getting paid dinner theater wages. So it was a tough pill to swallow
because
we were just in the costumes and all the cool guys were. Down at Second City.
Right.
Farley and all the...
Right.
Day.
Right.
It's painful.
I didn't mean to bring up a painful
know,
memory
I
for
know.
You.
I know. But you know what? It was a paying gig.
There you go. Absolutely.
So...
Believe me, how many free gigs do we end up doing?
Or,
you
know.
For whatever. You
that's
just,
exactly
you
right.
You just do it just because it's going to pay off somewhere down the road, right?
100%.
Right.
100%.
That, you know, that's why you do it.
Yep.
Rebecca Corey is here, and she is at Zany's. She has a huge show coming up at Zany's on Wells Street on Sunday. It's called Stand Up for Pits. She is an advocate for pit bulls and the care of pit bulls and their survival, and I want to talk to you all about that. Stand Up for Pits with Rebecca Corey at Zany's. Downtown Chicago on Wells Street on Sunday. I want to talk to you all about that.
Great.
When we get back. This is 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Ken Smith here with you until 1 a.m. And I'm here with Rebecca Corey. She is at Zany's and has a huge fundraiser coming up at Zany's on Sunday. She just did one today, as a matter of fact. And it's called Stand Up for Pits. And the pits stands for pit bulls. So where did your love of pit bulls come from?
About 10 years ago, I had lost a dog that I had suddenly from kidney failure. And then I started fostering this other dog named Angel. She was found in South LA. She was found with another dog who had severe bite wounds. And they were picked up. And brought to the shelter, and she stayed there for a long time, and the shelter staff tried networking her or whatever, and on her final day of life, she was going to be put to sleep. A small rescue came in and picked her up and saved her, and I found out about her and started fostering her and immediately realized how abused and discriminated against these type of dogs are solely based on their appearance.
Was this dog, you say it was found with another dog that had bite marks, was this dog used in dog fighting?
I mean, I'll never know, but she did have a severe chemical burn on her back that someone had either dumped battery acid or some sort of really hard burn chemical. Her ears were butchered off of her head, clearly home cropped with either scissors or razor blades, who knows. They were uneven, and she was dirty and thin and a mess, but she was literally like an angel on earth. She had the most... kind, gentle spirit. Like I used to call her a Velvet Buddha because she was just always.
Oh, I wish people would call me that.
Well, if
that's
you
such a
take
good
it.
Nickname. Hi, this is the Velvet Buddha
take
with
it.
You on 720
it's
WGN.
Yours.
All right, I appreciate
all right.
it. Yeah.
All right, but yeah, she literally changed the trajectory of my life. You know, for all these years, I thought that doing comedy was my purpose, and through her and our relationship. I realized that comedy and entertainment is my passion, but my purpose in life is educating, advocating, and saving the lives of pit bull type dogs.
And what's the biggest misconception that people have about pit bulls? Because there's usually a rash of stories
yeah.
about, oh, a child was bitten by a pit bull
sure.
or someone was mauled by a pit bull
sure.
or something of that nature. Are pit bulls naturally dangerous animals?
They are not.
They are not naturally dangerous
they
animals.
They are not.
Because usually the next thing you hear is, well, that's how they're bred.
Right.
Dogs, different dogs are, sheep dogs are bred to round up sheep. And so that's why they do that. And they're good at this. And different dogs are good at this. And the pit bulls are, they're bred to fight and they're bred to be aggressive. And,
right.
and, but you're saying that's not the case.
That is not
so that
the case.
Would be the biggest misconception about pit bulls?
Absolutely, without a question. That is.
So what are they bred for?
Well, I mean, I guess you could argue, there was a guy told me the other day, well, everyone has their theories, you know, taking down bulls, fighting each other, being guard dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Some say that they were nanny dogs. Here's what I say. I say that they're dogs. They have four legs. They're dogs. They
right.
were all born inherently good. And they have been stereotyped, discriminated against, and wrongly vilified based solely on their appearance. Because a dog that is labeled a pit bull is 85% of dogs that are labeled pit bull type dogs are what occupy shelters in the United States. But if you were to do DNA tests on these dogs, they're mutts. They're dogs. I mean, there is an American pit bull terrier, that is a breed that does exist. It mm-hmm. is a purebred, you know, breed, but that's not what all these dogs in the shelters are. These are just dogs. And human beings love to discriminate. They love to discriminate against each other, religions, genders, sexuality, and they do the same exact thing to dogs, unfortunately. And it's fear-based ignorance. And the truth of the matter is that humans are far more dangerous than any animal, any dog could ever be. And the people who need to be held responsible when an incident happens, whether it's a pit bull type dog or any dog that bites any other dog or any person, the person who owns that dog should be held accountable. What are you doing? Why are you not being responsible? These are domesticated animals that human beings have to be responsible for. And unfortunately, pit bull type dogs are always vilified by the media. They're strong. They're powerful. When they bite, they cause more damage than a shih tzu. But doesn't mean that they're born any more aggressive or different than a shih tzu that bites too. Like it's
right.
They're dogs.
Right.
They're dogs and should be treated like individuals.
I want to get into this a little bit more with you about why people look at them the way they do and why they are treated the way they do, because you talk about how these dogs are oftentimes abused, and that's something
yes.
that I can't wrap my mind around. I want to talk to you about that. Stand Up for Pits, that is Sunday at Zany's downtown on Wells Street.
That's right. It's at 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock show. It's going to be amazing.
And is there a website, or where should you go? Just go to the Zany's website, or
no,
go,
you
to
can go to
your website?
Yeah, standupforpits.us. And you can buy tickets right there. There's only a handful left.
Okay.
It's one of the best events on the planet. It's pretty fun.
So get your tickets right this second, because they're going fast. More with Rebecca Corey when we get back. It's 720 WGN. Thank you, Vic. 720 WGN. Ken Smith with you until 1 a.m. here with Rebecca Corey. She is at Zany's on Sunday at 6 p.m. for Stand Up for Pits. You can go to standupforpits.us for more information or for tickets. We were talking before the break about how there are so many misconceptions about pit bulls. And you were saying that the original pit bull that you had was a day away from being euthanized, mm-hmm. and was with another pit bull that had been mutilated in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
You said it looked like it had acid poured on it or something like that.
That was mine.
Oh, that was yours. That was yours.
Yep. That was the one who was going to be euthanized. She had a very severe chemical burn down her back. And her story is on our website too.
Okay. I don't understand why are pit bulls abused in this way.
I've been doing this for 10 years and learning about it, and I feel like I'm a pretty educated person about it. I've been traveling the world. I mean, not the world, the country, helping educate, advocate, and save them. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know the answer to that question. And all I
do you think there might be, and I'm being serious about this, maybe some type of satanic aspect to it or something? Because I'm saying, why specifically pit bulls? Because you've obviously come across this time and time and time again. This is not
every
random
day,
occurrences.
Day. Every day, all day. Every day, all day long. The stories, the images, the horrors that these dogs go through every single day in this country, the dog fighting epidemic, the abuse, the neglect, it is mind-numbing. And it's outrageous. And it also is, I feel like, a real direct reflection of our society. And evidently, we have a lot of really broken human beings that are walking amongst us. And unfortunately, ending animal abuse and the discrimination and essentially mass murder of these animals, innocent animals born inherently good year after year after year, that is not a priority in our society. And it's unfortunate because factually, it's been proven that people who commit crimes against animals will likely and most oftentimes do commit crimes against humans.
It's a stepping stone to
100%.
Right.
100%. Where you find an animal abuser, you will also find other crime.
Right, right.
And if our society made it, instead of vilifying the victim, instead of blaming the victims, these animals cannot protect themselves. They're at the mercy of humanity, but we vilify them. You know, one gets out of a yard and kills another dog or bites somebody or whatever. That's a dog.
Then automatically, I've always said that whenever there is a story about, you know, oftentimes it'll be a story about, I don't know, a bear bites someone or whatever. I'm going, yeah, it's a bear.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, that's what they do. Uh-huh. You're in their space.
That's,
you know, don't put down the tiger because the tiger was being a tiger.
Exactly.
You know?
Dogs bite. That is a way that dogs express themselves. Dogs bite. We all know that.
Right.
So, yes, depending on the size of the dog or whatever. Yeah. But what is most infuriating to me, there's lots of things that are infuriating to me. But don't get me wrong.
I can tell that I have hit a chord here.
Yes. Like the media's irresponsible, the way that they tell the story is it's a headline. It's clickbait. It's like pit bull attacks blah, blah, blah. Well, right. Pit bull is a term, first of all and foremost. Pit bull is a term used to describe a type of dog based solely on its appearance. So a dog that's short hair, big head, some muscles, pit bull. No, it could be an English bulldog, American bulldog, Dogo Argentino. It could be part boxer. It could be, there's a variety of bully breed type dogs the dog could be. Pit bull is a term. So
you're saying we need a re-education of what a pit bull is, because when you hear the term pit bull, whether or not you're talking about the dog or not, if you're talking about a person and you hear they're a pit bull, well, what does that mean? That means they're tough and they're ferocious they're a killer and they'll stop at nothing.
Because that's how they've been depicted in films, in music videos, in ads, in, you know, big, strong, you know, guy with big dog with chain with mutilated ears, because clipping a dog's ears is not, you're removing a body part
Why do they clip
it is all
ears?
About aesthetics. It makes them look
tougher,
badass, and like, oh, you know, and these breeders that crop these dogs' ears, and it same goes for Dobermans. That they're born with ears and tails for a reason. No human has the right to. It's animal mutilation. It is abuse.
Are pit bulls the main breed that is used in dog fighting?
Pit bull type dogs, yes.
Okay.
And you know, a lot of people think that the dog fighting dogs are these big, like 100-pound ones that are really, you know, they're not. Dogs that are used in dog fighting operations are usually, the average weight is between 35 to 38 pounds, because they want the fights to last long. And the fights can last up to 3 hours. They usually end because the dog
That's ridiculous.
It's horrific.
I mean, that's...
They sell concessions. They
So it's still, you know, the whole Michael Vick thing was 10 years ago plus, I think more than. You haven't heard much about dog fighting since then, but you're saying it's still very prevalent in the United States?
Everywhere. All ethnicities, all tax brackets, everywhere. This is not just inner city. This is not just backwoods. There are educated, wealthy people fighting dogs. 100%. All over the country. The barbaric nature of dog fighting is something that is beyond comprehension. The natural nature of a good person is, if you saw two dogs getting into a scuffle, what would be your nature, a person who's normal, would be like, I got to get that dog off that other dog. You pull them apart.
Right.
Can you fathom being someone who's initiating and forcing? Because
the culture we live in now, there was just a story on the news today about some kid that was stabbed and killed in New York or something, and 10 people filmed it with their phones so that they could go live on Facebook with it, and no one stepped in to help the kid, and he died.
So to answer your question, I'm going to bring it full circle on you.
All right.
To you said to me, why?
Yeah.
I could ask the same question about that scenario. We have broken, I don't know if it's parents not doing their job, I don't know if humans nowadays are just, they lack a chip that contains compassion and intelligence. I don't know. Integrity. I don't know. What is missing in people?
You might
people?
Be checking all the boxes, Rebecca. You might be checking all the boxes. I think it's a little bit of all of that.
I do too. And yeah. I do not believe for 1 second that the abuse of voiceless animals, I don't care what size they are, how much they weigh, what they look like, there is no difference in that to the abuse of a child. They are helpless, voiceless beings that are controlled by knowing adults that are of sound mind, that know exactly what they're doing to victimize those beings. And it's not okay. It is not okay. One should not be more important than the other, because the action is a common denominator, and that action is dangerous. Those people are a danger to society.
If you are an animal lover, not just a dog lover or a lover of pit bulls, but if you are an animal lover, you're going to want to check out Stand Up for Pits. It is this Sunday, 6 p.m., the Zanies on Wells Street in Old Town. Rebecca Corey is headlining, and not only will you learn something, not only will the money be going to a good cause, but you're going to see a great show and a funny show and be entertained. And thank you so much for coming in here tonight and informing me about the bias against pit bulls and the problem that we have here in America about pit bulls. And I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're a class act. I appreciate you having me on.
720 WGN. Good evening. It's Ken Smith. And it's pizza time. The Chicago Pizza Summit is coming up. What the heck is a pizza summit? I don't know, but it sounds good to me. Joining me right now is the founder of the Chicago Pizza Summit, Anthony Spina. How are you doing, Anthony?
Hey, doing great.
From Soothsayer Hot Sauce, it's Kyle Samarza. Kyle, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Wait a minute. One of these mics is yours. How about
is,
now?
Is that it?
There we go.
Wonderful.
I'll just bring them all up.
Perfect.
And Kendall Burns runs the U.S. Pizza Museum that you may have heard of. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm excellent. So I guess I'll bring the first question to you, Anthony, since you founded this thing. What the heck is a pizza summit?
Well, a pizza summit is a little bit of what you're looking at right now. It's bringing together the Chicago pizza community into one place for one day.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did you come up? Did you come up with this idea?
So it was something that was kind of a collective decision as we realized, you know, as Chicagoans, that it's such a great food city. We have Wing Fest, Bacon Fest, Taco Fest.
I've been to all of them, as you can tell.
We have a Lobster Fest, yet nothing to bring together the pizza
community. Pizza community.
Totally.
And when you say the pizza community, are you saying that just pizza lovers? And do you find that's the favorite food of most people in Chicago?
Well, I think in Chicago, pizza is a universal language.
That's true. What year is this for the Pizza Summit?
So this will be the fourth year.
Fourth year for the Pizza Summit. And was it a hit immediately, or did it kind of have to? You're nodding, Kyle. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've been to just about all of them myself as a fan and then a participant, and it's as a fan, it's been a big hit pretty much immediately.
So if you go to the Pizza Summit, what happens at the Pizza Summit? The first thing that happens is, wait a minute, and how excited was I when you came in here with this bad boy? The pizza plate. They give you a plate that's shaped like a slice of pizza. And will you explain?
That's
you,
right.
You go to the Pizza Summit, and what happens?
Well, and you can't see this right now, but again, the pizza-shaped plate is the signature item, and each year it's a different one. So you get the pizza-shaped plate, all-you-can-eat pizza from some of the best pizza establishments. When I say best, these are a curated selection from Chicago, and then, of course, drink tickets.
Ooh. Yeah. So do you know who some of the participants that are going to be serving pizza are there this year?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So just from a very quick breakdown, we have a nice mix of some classic stalwarts, right? You have the Gino's, Lou Malnati's, Connie's, Home Run Inn.
But the staples.
Staples.
Right? You know, the Mount Rushmore.
The classics.
Right. Good.
But then you have some new school spots. So, for example, like Boiler Room in Logan Square.
Boiler Room, what is that, $7 for pizza and a shot of Jameson and a PBR?
That's what they're known for.
I had heard.
Yes,
I had heard. Go ahead.
But then we do always leave a couple spots open for those who are pushing the boundaries of pizza further. A couple wild cards.
All right.
So this year, the Deep Dish Daiquiri.
Is that the name of a pizza or name of an establishment?
Oh, it's a drink.
Oh, it's a drink. Oh, yeah. So wait a minute. Okay. All right. Stop the presses. There's going to be a deep dish daiquiri there?
Absolutely. Yes.
So I'm assuming that there's some type of like a Bloody Mary type of component to it.
Yep.
What's going to be in a deep dish daiquiri?
So instead of it really just telling you what it is, it's more the experience.
Okay.
So that's the truth. I can't explain it. Deep dish. You got to be there. But the other thing, too, is we actually, our friends over at Deep Eddy, they are going to infuse
that flavored vodka there.
They're going to infuse real pepperoni for pepperoni vodka. I kid you not. Their master distiller is going to do it.
Okay, wait a minute now. Now you're just. Remember the old Bugs Bunny cartoons where they would turn into Elmo Fudd would turn into a jackass? Is that what I look like to you? Is that what I look like to you, Anthony?
It's a real thing.
Deep Eddy Vodka is going to have pepperoni vodka at this thing?
Pepperoni-infused
vodka that they will be making drinks with.
So pizza, as the universal language, right? Where can't it go? We're here to push the boundaries of pizza as far as we can see.
What? There's so much. I have so many questions to ask you about this thing. And I want to ask you, Kendall, because you've got the U.S. Pizza Museum.
That's right.
Why here in Chicago? What exactly is the U.S. Pizza Museum? What we can see at the U.S. Pizza Museum. But I've got a break for news. I want to talk to you about that. Before we get to that, very quickly, if someone is looking for tickets for the Chicago Pizza Summit, when is it? Where is it? And how do they get tickets?
Wonderful. So this is going to be Sunday, October 6th at Theater on the Lake. And tickets can be purchased at do312.com/Chicago Pizza Summit.
Do312.com/Chicago Pizza Summit. And that's going to be on Sunday, October
6th.
Sunday, October 6th at Theater on the Lake, the Chicago Pizza Summit. So not only is it all you can eat pizza, you may be drinking a deep dish daiquiri and having cocktails made with deep Eddie pepperoni infused vodka. What will they think of next? More with the Chicago Pizza Summit coming up. I'm Ken Smith. This is 720 WGN.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Thank you, Vic. 720 WGN. Ken Smith with you, and we're talking the Chicago Pizza Summit. We're here with Anthony Spina. He's the founder of the Chicago Pizza Summit. From Soothsayer Hot Sauce, it's Kyle Samsarza. Am I saying that right?
Samsara, yeah.
Samsara. And Kendall Bruns from the U.S. Pizza Museum. I think I called you Kendall Burns earlier. I said Ken Burns has that documentary on Channel 11 right now, so I guess I got Ken Burns on the brain right now. Yeah.
All's forgiven.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. So the U.S. Pizza Museum is located, it's over on, it's on Roosevelt over by the movie theater, right?
Yeah, it's at the Roosevelt Collection. Yes, we've been there since last August. Originally, we were going to be there for 3 months, and then due to overwhelming demand, we decided to stay for a whole extra year. And so we still got a couple more weeks of that. We're going to be there through October 13th. We're having a big pizza party on October 12th with pizza from Peace.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, so it's winding down. So if you I know you've heard about the U.S. Pizza Museum, and you've been thinking, oh, I want to check it out. Well, you better hurry up and check it out, because you said the last day is what, October what?
October 13th.
October 13th.
Yes.
And if you go to the U.S. Pizza Museum, what are you going to see there? Old slices of pizza? What are you going to see there?
We do have one old slice of pizza that's preserved in acetate.
It was found. Yeah. It was found by the pyramids. Indiana Jones found it, and it was a slice of pizza. Yes.
We do have one, and we have a pizza MRE that was just recently introduced. They're never pizza. It's like meal ready to eat that the military would have.
No, sure, yeah,
it's a new innovation. We've got one of those. So there are a couple of actual pizzas in the collection, but you know, much like the Pizza Summit, we are a celebration of all things pizza, but we try to really focus on pizza history, the people behind the pizzas that you eat, the families that innovated different styles of pizza, and pizza art, and we have events there. And we have a collection, so we have all kinds of memorabilia from throughout the decades celebrating pizza.
And I'm sure a lot of it is from Chicago.
Oh yeah, we definitely have a spotlight on Chicago.
Sure.
Because Chicago's a great pizza city. It's got a lot of its own like innovative styles of pizza, whether you want to talk about deep dish, you want to talk about stuffed pizza, or you want to talk about tavern style thin crust pizza. We've got a lot of that here.
So I assume it was between Chicago and New York where you were going to put this place, I'm assuming.
Well, you know, I live in Chicago. I've lived in Chicago for 9 years.
So you put your thumb on the scale
I'm going to open my museum where I live. New York. I love New York pizza, but I'm in Chicago.
What have you found, Anthony, with this being the fourth year coming up of the Pizza Summit, the people who are coming into to the Pizza Summit every year, and you could chime in on this too, Kendall. What have you learned about the tastes, the pizza tastes of Chicagoans? Do you find that they more prefer the deep dish or the stuffed, or do you find that they really kind of like that thin crust, that tavern style pizza that's in the neighborhoods?
Okay, so yeah, I'll jump in on this one first, and this is my personal opinion, is that
This is Anthony. Go ahead.
That question is something that incites dialogue, right? I mean, there is no, you say, okay, is it deep dish? Is it tavern style? Is it north side, south side?
It's like sex. There's no bad pizza, right? I mean, can we all agree on that? Yeah. Okay, we can start there. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the one thing year over year is just to see the conversation, right? Because that's one of the great things about what makes Chicago such a beautiful pizza city is not only the nuances from a neighborhood standpoint, from a style standpoint, but is that you could be dropped in to any neighborhood, any street, and say, where's your favorite pizza place? And
right.
You could do that for years and not go to them all.
Everyone's got their... If you have a favorite pizza place, and I'm not talking about... And like I said, you know, the Mount Rushmore in Chicago, they're fantastic. But if you have a pizza place that you love and you want to tell us about, give us a call, shoot us a text, 312-981-7200.
I mean, I believe in the there are no bests, only favorites. And as, you know, my role is...
That's good. That's good. Yeah.
My role is like director children. Of a pizza museum.
Oh, no, that would be the opposite. No, you can't have best children or favorite children. Never mind. Go ahead. I digress.
I mean, it's almost as controversial to ask that question, who's your favorite child? I talk to visitors at the museum all day long about their favorite pizzas. And I can tell you that... There are some people who passionately believe that deep dish is just for tourists, but there are a lot of people who believe that. There are a lot of people who live in Chicago and come in and tell me that they love deep dish. They've always loved deep dish. That's their pizza. And then there are locals that come in and they love tavern. And there's locals that come in and they're like, no, I like wood-fired pizza. So that is one of the things that makes Chicago so great is besides those styles of pizza that are really unique to us, you can also get great New Haven style pizza. If you want to get a New York slice, you can find it. Detroit style pizza. All these different kinds of pizza can be enjoyed here at a really high quality level.
I've always found that, you know, I have fond memories when I think about the deep dish pizza and the stuffed pizza. You know, I have fond memories of, you know, being a kid and it was like, well, if you were going downtown to Geno's East, that was a big deal. That was a big deal. You were going downtown. You were going to Geno's East.
Special occasion.
It was a special occasion thing.
Pizza party.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, I definitely have a love. Because my favorite food is cheese. So you can't go wrong with a pizza.
And it's a diverse category, too. Lots of different kinds of cheese.
Right. Lots of different kinds of cheese. So I love cheese. So what is a hot sauce purveyor doing at the Pizza Summit, Kyle?
So I was fortunate enough to get the invite from Anthony on this last year, and we do a lot of flavor forward hot sauces. We try to play around with different ingredients to kind of pair with food more than just pure spice and overpower it. And so we kind of were put to the task of what is the ultimate pizza hot sauce. And so what we went ahead and created with that was a hot sauce that tastes like pizza in a bottle. So,
okay, explain that. A hot sauce that tastes like pizza in a bottle. So if I were to take some of that hot sauce and put it on my finger.
So you would get we make it with beer, with Old Style Beer, former sponsor of the Pizza Summit.
Okay.
So you have a lot of like the yeast and the kind of bready taste to that as an undertone, and then roasted Roma tomatoes and roasted red peppers, and then on top of that oregano, basil, different classic Italian spices, and it comes out like a spicy marinara.
Wow. Okay.
We're eating in the green room on the pizza. Yeah.
I just recently started putting jardiniere on my pizza.
Recently?
And I know.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm late to the party.
I am so late to the party on that one, and I can't stop putting jardiniere on my pizza now.
Well, now you're getting real specific Chicago. Like, you're not finding jardiniere on pizza anywhere else.
Oh, they don't even know what it is anywhere else. Yeah, that is definitely a Chicago thing. So here's a question for you. So I guess I'll put you on the spot. As far as from what you have found with people coming to the museum, with people coming to the Pizza Summit, who are their so who do you find are their favorite? Let's start off with the deep dish and the stuffed. Who is their favorites? Is it the people that we know, or could it be somebody from the hood, or maybe a surprise in there?
I mean, I get lots of people who are very excited about their local, like, especially people who live in different suburbs, neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come in and be real big on a local option that they grew up with. And I think that's one of the things that makes pizza so personal for people, is there's this nostalgic, you grew up with it thing.
Right.
And especially, you know, it is like a special event food sometimes. You go out, it's relatively inexpensive way to take a family out to eat food and have this communal meal. And so if you grow up going to a place, it's going to resonate with you as being special. But I think it's all over the board. People love the famous places. People love the little mom and pop shops. It's really interesting how varied it is.
Are there any mom and pop shops that come to mind that stand out from the people who keep coming to the summit?
Yeah, and so here's the one thing that question kind of sparked for me, was the beautiful nature of pizza as a divining rod to discovery. And there's one specific place.
He's waxing poetically about pizza.
Getting majestic, but
yeah.
Vito and Nick's on the south side of Chicago.
Oh, well, if you're on the south side, they love Vito and Nick's, yeah.
I mean, it's something that if you've never been, right? I mean, it's an experience in itself.
I went in there, and I had 100 eyes looking at me, go, he's not from around here. I can tell he's not from around here. He's a Hyde Parker. I can tell he's not one of us. But the pizza was damn good.
And that's amazing. So pizza bringing people together, right?
Yes.
And that's what is so beautiful about it.
I got to say, one of the things that is incredible about the Pizza Summit is having all of these pizzas in one place is a very rare, special thing to be able to do. To be able to try 10 different pizzas within just as quick as you can eat them.
Right.
And have them next to each other on a plate and compare them and contrast them is really special and unusual.
The Chicago Pizza Summit is coming up. Fourth annual Chicago Pizza Summit coming up on October 6th at Theater on the Lake. If you want tickets, you go to do312.com for tickets. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about the Pizza Summit and specific pizzas here in the city of Chicago, what people like, what people don't like. And I have a very interesting pizza question to ask you that maybe you've never been asked before. I hope you've never been asked it before. We'll do it in just a second. This is 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Ken Smith with you with the guys from the Chicago Pizza Summit, Anthony, Kyle, and Kendall. The Pizza Summit coming up on October 6th at the Theater on the Lake. If you want to get tickets, you go to do312.com, and it's all-you-can-eat pizza plus drink tickets, correct?
That's correct.
And it's fourth year, and it's continued to grow. I'd been to it a couple of times. There's a butcher shop in Wicker Park.
Chop Shop
in Wicker Park. And then last year was at Talia Hall?
Talia Hall.
And so now Theater on the Lake.
Absolutely. Beautiful venue.
Right off off of Fullerton? Fullerton and the lakefront. So there are two sessions that day?
Correct.
And when are the sessions? On a Sunday?
2 to 5 and 6 to 9.
And now here is a tip. Take this tip from me, someone who has gone to a few different food festival type things, or where it's all you can eat type of thing. And I kind of learned this going to beer sampling things. I went to my first beer sampling thing, and they gave me like a little mug that looked like it was from a dollhouse. It was like 2-3 ounces. And I'm like, what am I going to do with this? And an hour later, I was hammered.
You got to pace yourself.
You've got to pace yourself. Thank you very much. You have got to pace yourself.
Pro tip.
Because, like you were saying, it is rare. And it's more than rare. I mean, when do you ever get a chance, unless you're doing a bang bang, which is where you go from one restaurant to another and eat twice?
That's two.
That's what that's called?
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's what that's called, yeah.
That's awesome.
And when are you going to have all these different pizza places in the same place where you can try them and compare them all at the same time? So you have to pace yourself. if there's something you don't like, don't eat it. This is kind of like a buffet rule, too. You can take this rule to Vegas with you, too.
Generally.
Okay, well, when you're fat, you don't. When you're fat, you eat it and go, I probably shouldn't have eaten that. Mm. Yes, thin people go, oh, I don't like it. I don't eat it. Or I'm full. See, that's something that we don't do that often.
Mm. But yes, it's still on the plate.
It's still, oh, yes, it's still on the plate. So pace yourself when you go to this, because you can put away a lot of pizza in 3 hours. A lot of pizza, even when you're pacing yourself. So how many different restaurants do you think will be there this year? I know you're still finalizing.
So we are finalizing. An actual hot tip is Friday morning, we'll be announcing the 14. So
So I don't get the exclusive. That's okay. It's all right. I'm not hurt. That's all right. So you'll be, so the big announcement will be on Friday of the 14 different places that will be there.
Well, actually,
yes,
all 14 are, drum roll please.
Oh, really? Okay.
Dropping it like it's hot. Okay. Connie's Pizza.
Yes.
Gino's East.
Yes.
Boiler Room. Baki. Home Run Inn. Aurelio's Pizza. Italco Foods, a.k.a. Pizza Puffs.
Love it.
Pizza Daiquiri, which we spoke of earlier. Taco in a Bag. Doing Pizza in a Bag.
Ah.
Angelo's Stuffed. The Original Pizzeria Uno in Due. Lou Malnati's. Slice of Cheesies. And Demos.
That's 14.
It's 14. But here's another exclusive.
Yes.
So this year, what we're debuting, you know, you talk about this kind of Mount Rushmore of pizza.
Yes. Right?
But there's a lot of spots, you know, these real, you know, these neighborhood gems that may not be able to do the full kind of, you know, commitment of like all that pizza for
right.
3 hours.
Right.
So we figured out a way through math and science and, of course, you know, lots of pizza, figuring out how much one person can eat in an hour.
Right.
So it's actually going to be a rotating localized pizza spot. And so we're going to have Reno, Pauly G's, and Professor Pizza doing the history of grandma pies.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, oh, boy. I'm getting full just thinking about it.
We literally had to rent an extra generator, so that's a real thing.
Awesome. So that is the Chicago Pizza Summit, Sunday, October 6th, 2 to 5, Theater on the Lake. Do312.com for tickets. Get them now. I've got 15 seconds. Very quickly, what's your favorite frozen pizza?
My favorite question in the entire world. So I like Jack's just as a consistent, but honestly, all frozen pizza.
I'm a big fan of frozen pizza. You know why? Because I can put extra cheese on it when I get home.
Oh, you got to
I can
it
put
up.
Extra cheese on. You can doctor them up. You can doctor them up, and you don't have to wait for them. I love it.
Gino's Frozen is great. Also, so is Connie's and Home Run In.
Thank you guys so much for coming in. Pizza Lovers Unite. The Pizza Summit, Chicago Pizza Summit, is going to be at Theater on the Lake October 6th. Two different servings or two different times. You can go 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. 3 hours of free pizza, or 3 hours of all-you-can-eat pizza, and drinks, too. Sounds great to me. Thank you, guys. Thank this you. Is 720 WGN.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vic. 720 WGN. Ken Smith with you for the rest of this hour. And if you're like me, you like game shows. And, well, if you're like me, you love game shows. And I'm watching television the other day, and I was so happy. You know, you're flipping channels, trying to find something to watch, and you come across something, and you just can't take your eyes off of it. And that's what happened with me here. I want to welcome to the show. I know you've seen her on Access TV for many years. Katie Darrell, she's the host of the very, very best of the 70s on Access TV. Welcome to the show, Katie. How are you doing tonight?
I'm so good. Thanks for having me. And I love game shows.
Yes, who doesn't love game shows? I always wanted to be a game show host when I was a kid.
Me too. I was really? So like, oh, Bob Barker was my idol. I don't think I missed an episode. I recorded them on VHS tape when I would even go to school, come home, watch them. And I distinctly remember the episode where one day he had black hair, and the next day he was a silver fox. And I was like, what happened to Bob Barker?
That is so funny, because I was just telling my wife this yesterday, because I used to watch The Price is Right all the time with my grandmother, okay? We'd watch, like, General Hospital, and we'd watch, like, The Price is Right and stuff like this, right, when I was a kid. And then...
Little All My Children.
Exactly. And, and then, you know, high school years, the college years happen.
Oh, yes.
And then, you know, then I'm home, I turn back, I turn on Price is Right. What happened to Bob Barker? He's completely gray. What happened to my exact words? What happened to Bob Barker?
And that can be traumatizing to a kid, you know? I mean, like, you're young and you're watching this, and you're like, whoa, that happened so suddenly. I mean, again, like, I think he did the hair thing. I mean, that was in the 80s. And, I mean, we weren't used to drastic changes like that. Like, nowadays, like, a celebrity, you know, dyes their hair every 10 minutes.
Nobody has gray hair anymore.
Right?
You can't tell how old anybody is anymore. They all have perfect hair and with no gray now. So I'm coming across your show on Access TV the other day, and it's the very, very best of the 70s. And explain what the show is.
So great. So the very, very best of the 70s is kind of like your typical countdown show. So each week, it's a different topic. So for instance, you caught the best 70s game shows, but we also have like 70s sitcoms, 70s TV moms, 70s cartoons, 70s catchphrases, horror films. You get the idea. And there's 10. So, you know, it starts out with number 10 and we count down to number 1. And as we're counting down, we're showing clips from these famous shows and movies and TV shows, but we're also having celebrity commentators. So you'll hear Morgan Fairchild or Greg Brady or Anson Williams from the Happy Days talking about these game shows or whatever the topic is that week and saying why they loved them and why they deserve to be on the list. And so you stumbled upon the very, very best of the 70s game shows edition.
Okay, so without any further ado, I have the list here from the game shows.
Oh, God. Okay, great.
Okay, and we're going to start off. Michael, are you with me over there, my producer Michael?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and this is the Access TV list from the very, very best of the 70s. This is number 10.
These people, dressed as they are, come from all over the United States to make deals here in the marketplace of America. Let's make a deal! And now, here's America's top trader, TV's big dealer, Monty Hall! For my lady, a royal, elegant, full-length chinchilla coat. The epitome of fashion from Dicker and Dicker of Beverly Hills. Its appraised value, $5,000.
So the thing about that, Katie, is if they tried to give away a mink coat on television today, there'd be people picketing outside the studio.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be getting blood tossed on them.
Would be thrown on them, yeah.
Yes, exactly right. And so let's make a deal. And it's still on, by the way. And people would dress up in basically like Halloween costumes. The more outrageous, the better. So they would get noticed by Monty Hall. And then they would try and make deals with Monty Hall. It's like, oh, I'll give you $500 or I'll give you what's behind curtain number 3. Now, our producer, Michael, has talk about a little Easter egg as we're prepping for the show today. Michael, what did you tell me about Let's Make a Deal?
I have a very, very strong affection towards this show for one specific reason. Growing up, the same way you were watching game shows back in the day, my dream game show to get on was Let's Make a Deal. I'd watch it every single day. But I'd watch the old 1970s version, and then Wayne Brady became the host. And then I found myself living in Los Angeles, going to UCLA for a little bit. And my one dream was to be on this show, and I actually got on the show back in 2012. and actually went for the big prize at the end of the game.
Wait a minute, you won and got to the you got to the big deal?
Yeah, I got to the big deal of the day too.
Were you dressed up too? What were you dressed up as?
The whole thing that when I was young, I would watch Price is Right and everyone would say, "Hey, oh, I would love to go on Price is Right. That's my dream. It's so cool." Or Wheel of Fortune. And I'm like, and then I saw this game show where everyone was dressed up in like Halloween costumes, and I'm like, "What are you guys talking about? That's the show you want to get on? Is Let's Make a Deal?" So when
I hope you were like a chicken, a giant chicken. Please be a giant chicken. What were you?
Well, my funds weren't exactly there.
Oh,
at the
so
time.
This was a homemade costume, is what
so,
you're saying?
Yeah. So I was Zeus, and I wore a bed sheet on my head, and my girlfriend at the time painted herself completely gold, and we cut out a little lightning bolt out of cardboard paper.
Oh, she's got to leave. Wait a minute. She's got to leave a little hole down by the base of the spine there, or else, at least, if you watch Goldfinger, the old Bond movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was wondering what you were talking about.
Yeah, she could die. Yeah. Yeah.
So we went there and we went through the whole rigmarole of the 4 hours you need to wait to go to the audition process. And then I cannot believe it. He called me and pointed to me, and I was like out of a dream. And I went down there and played the easiest game. I had to guess how many numbers were on a dollar bill and how many sevens were on a dollar bill. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's, and there's only one. So I could either take the cash prize or I could go for the big door. And what's behind the curtain?
And
I went for what's behind the curtain.
You always go for the unknown.
You always go for
the unknown.
And won a pool table, and that was pretty cool. But then at the end of the game, he came around, and everyone else won like jet skis and trips and everything. And the guy with the pool table, of course, I'm like, yeah, screw the pool table. Let me get the big deal of the day.
Right.
And I did. Here's the thing, though.
Here we go. Drum roll, please.
Oh, no.
We told my girlfriend and I said, no matter what happens, if we get up to that, if we somehow get on stage, we got to pick door number two. We got to pick door number two because we watched it all the time together. I picked door number two. The prize was in door number three.
Ah.
So here's the funny thing, though. Because door number two, even though it wasn't the big prize, it was a giant $8,000 hot tub. And
which is perfect for your dorm room.
Perfect for your dorm room. Perfect for my.
You had no idea where you're going to put the pool table. Now you've got a hot tub.
Hot tub, and of course, perfect for the dorm room and a guy who lives in Chicago, where it's like 20 degrees at all times. So yeah, I got to win. We won, and it was an amazing experience. And yeah, that game, it was the best moment of my life. Let's make
it. For you. So I've always heard, because I had a friend who went on The Price is Right, and they won as well, and they were given the option of, do you want to take the prize, or would you like to take the cash equivalent minus taxes, for that exact reason of like, oh, I have no place to put it.
Right.
They give you the option of like, oh, we'll just buy it back from you, or did you really have to take that prize?
So I also heard that theory too about what's going on. What they did for us, I think they offered, because you have to do paperwork at the end of the game. All the people are in their costumes in a small office. They gave us the option, I think you could get $100 or your prize. Ugh. Like it was not.
Wait a minute, $100 or your? Wait a minute, $100 or an $8,000 hot tub?
Yes, yes. And I remember thinking, that'd be cool, but I might as well just get it and bring it back to my house in McHenry. They'll ship it. It actually ended up costing in taxes
$3,000 or something.
No, thank goodness. Around like. I think it was like $700.
Okay, but still, did you have $700?
No.
Yeah, of course not.
But so we.
You know what I would have done? If I was a producer or even knew about this back in the day, I then would have waited in the parking lot and been a creep that's like, hey, man, I'll give you $300 for the hot tub.
That's a great idea.
Buying these epic prizes.
Well, the funny thing is, they ship it to you like 3 or 4 months later, and it's just a giant hot tub that's sitting in your lawn for months. And when it was snowing, and we'd have to like shovel around the hot tub, and it became like this big like pain in the butt. But it was so worth it to just be on that show and just experience a game show. There's nothing better than game shows on TV, in my opinion.
At least you don't have to worry about somebody stealing the hot tub off your front porch.
Very true.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about the package stealers there when you win a hot tub on Let's Make a Deal.
By the end of it, it was just a giant box, and there was so much snow on it from that. It was like 2013 winter where it was, I think they called it Snowmageddon. And there was so much snow surrounding this hot tub that it was just, it became laughable. Like, we couldn't park in our driveway anymore. And then we ended up selling it to somebody for much, much less than
They got a good deal, I
they
bet.
Did. They made the deal.
They ended up making the deal.
Yeah, but that was the coolest experience of my life. Did you ever do anything like that, Ken? Have you ever jumped into game shows? Like, have you been on a game show, seen one in person or anything?
I've never been on a game show. I actually went to, in Vegas, and they have a traveling sometimes. They'll have a Price is Right stage show.
Yeah.
And, you know, they put the name tag on you when you're in the audience, and they call people up and stuff like that. And I was great. I remember I guessed the name. I guessed how much the car was exactly.
Wow.
In the showcase. But I was sitting in the audience.
Oh.
So I didn't win anything. I didn't win anything. Katie Darrell is with us. She's on Access TV, the very, very best of the 70s. We're talking about the very, very best of the 70s game shows. Katie, can you hang around for a second so we can finish off this top 10 list?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. We'll be back in just a second. 720 WGN.
It's you.
720 WGN. Michael, that was you on Let's Make a Deal right there?
That was the infamous
clip. Would you play that off your phone? Or did you have it in the WGN computer?
Oh, yeah. It's actually one of our hotkeys.
It's locked in.
Anytime.
720 WGN, Ken Smith with you, and Katie Darrell is with us. She is the host of the very, very best of the 70s on Access TV, and the latest episode was the very, very best of the 70s game shows, and we just talked about number 10, which was Let's Make a Deal. Let's quickly try and go through this. Here, when I was prepping for this, Katie, I cut all this audio last night, and I realized I had like 20 minutes worth of audio at the end of the day.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. So now we've got it. Like,
that's what's great about the show, though. I mean, sorry to sidestep, but like, you go down a rabbit hole. You're watching it, and kind of like you said, you stumbled on it the other night, and you were like, you know, totally enthralled, and all of a sudden, like, it's over. You're like, oh my God, there went a half hour of my life. And that's what's happening every week. It's like every Thursday, it's something different. And you all of a sudden look at your watch and you're like, oh man, I've been watching this, you know, for 10 minutes. And don't even get me started about when we have like a marathon on Saturdays where all the episodes are back to back. Even I fall for it. And I've seen every episode like 12 times.
Right. And you know them back and forth already.
Problem?
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, you know what's number one? There's no surprise. I'm like, I know.
I love those kind of shows. All right, let's quickly go to number 9, Michael.
California, it's the Dating Game. And here's the star of the show and your host, Jim Glenn.
Number 2, one of my worst subjects is spelling. Could you tell me, how do you spell relief?
F-A-R-T.
That's the Dating Game, and you'll find on this list a lot of Chuck Barris shows are on this list. And that's the first one that shows up. That's the Dating Game. Another Chuck Barris show comes in at number 8, and I loved The Gong Show when I was a kid. I loved The Gong Show.
I just wanted to hit it. I just wanted to be able to hold that big thing and hit it.
And it was, and you know, and they've, a lot of these shows are either still on the air or are back on the air. Like, they did a reboot of The Gong Show on ABC a couple of years ago with Mike Myers in costume, and it was not good. It just it didn't have that same kind of feel that the original had, that nostalgia. But The Gong Show. And that's loosely you could call that a game show, but I love The Gong Show when I was a kid. Okay, so that was number 8, The Gong Show. Now, Michael, play it. Number 7.
From Hollywood, the music capital of the world, it's the $100,000 Name That Tune.
Tom, I can name that tune in 6 notes.
I can name it in 4.
I'll name that tune in 3 notes.
Name that tune.
This Burt Bacharach, Hal David tune, which lent its name to one of the Carpenters' gold albums, became a runaway success for them. It established that brother-sister team as recording stars of the 1970s era. 3 notes.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love.
That is wrong. Debbie gets it. Could we hear it, Tommy Oliver?
Okay, so two things here, Katie. One,
sure.
When I was getting this clip, I said what the world needs now is love, sweet love, and got it wrong and was ticked off. Just like that guy got it wrong.
Right. We all play along.
Right, you all play along.
Shows, right? You're playing along.
That's
and you think you're always smarter than them.
That's the key to a lot of these game shows, the play-along ability, if that is such a word. The other thing that comes to my mind when I think of Name That Tune is there was one part of the show where there was somebody singing and they would omit, they would omit the title. They go, la, 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 la. That person was Kathy Lee Johnson, who you all know as Kathy Lee Gifford. That's where she got her start.
Adorable. She's adorable. You look at the
she had a Dorothy Hamill haircut.
Yes. And her voice is stunning, and she's so charming. And you're like, of course, she's a star.
And let me try and get through a couple of more of these before we go to news. That was number seven. Number six is the match game. I think it should be ranked higher, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
Okay.
Number five is the $10,000 pyramid. And before we
which then became, you know, the 25,000
the 20, 25, 50, 100, exactly. I mean, well, you can't stay at $10,000 forever, right?
No.
I mean, you got to keep moving along.
Bitcoin pyramid.
That's exactly yes, the Bitcoin pyramid. I love it. And okay, now we're getting into the big ones. Here we go. Number four.
From Hollywood, here come the newlyweds.
In what country will your husband say the last foreign car he rode in was manufactured, Fran?
The United States.
That's not a foreign country.
Texas.
That's another Chuck Barris show on the list. Yeah.
I think it was one of our commentators that even mentioned they're like, the newlywed game is like a surefire way for people to get a divorce. Like,
oh, absolutely.
You realize how dumb your partner is.
Absolutely. And I had the home version, and still do, of the $25,000 pyramid at home. It's all raggedy. It's got duct tape on the corners and everything. And I had the newlywed game home version. So that's try that one on game night. You want to get some couples mad at each other? Have a few cocktails and start playing the newlywed game at home.
Oh God, you're right.
This is it's all great stuff.
At least the TV version censored at home.
Oh, right.
Violent.
Exactly. Top three still to come. Katie Darrow with us from Access TV. If people want to see some of the kind of stuff you do on social media, what at Katie Darrow?
Yeah, at Katie Darrow on Facebook and on Twitter. Of course, you can go to the Access TV homepage. That's AXS.TV. And the show is on Thursday nights at 8/7 Central. Every week it's a different episode. So I think actually tonight was crime movies and next Thursday is early 70s sitcoms. So lots of good stuff still to come.
Oh boy, you got my mind working on that. I can like that. Yeah, I like the crime movies and then the sitcoms. I mean, there's a million of them.
Are you feeling lucky?
How do you even pick 10? How do you even do it?
Oh, it is so hard. I have to tell you, like, truly, we are all around a conference table and we're looking at all these emails from viewers and the voting list. And then all of us are putting in, like, that should be a game show. Us trying to put together these lists, watching the producers and everyone fight and argue and barter with each other. All right, I'll give that to you, but only at number four. But you then have to give me this at number seven. It's so funny.
There you get arguments all around the table before the show airs. Okay, we got the top three game shows according to 70s game shows according to Access TV. Thank you, Vic. 720 WGN. We're here with Katie Darrow from Access TV. She is the host of the very, very best of the 70s on Access TV. And tonight we're talking about the very, very best of the 70s game shows. And their top 10 list consists of number 10, Let's Make a Deal, number 9, The Dating Game, number 8, The Gong Show, number 7, Name That Tune, number 6, Match Game, number 5, the $10,000 pyramid, number four, the newlywed game, and we're getting into the top three. Now, Katie, I have a few honorable mentions that didn't make your list. Would you like to hear those?
Ooh, I would love to.
Okay, some honorable mentions that didn't make the list. Just a quick 10-second clip here. Who remembers the show? Actually, this show is back on the air now. The Joker's Wild.
Oh, yeah.
From Hollywood, here's the game where knowledge is king and lady luck is queen. It's The Joker's Wild. And now, here's the host of our show, Jack Barry.
Okay, Phil Gilbert, it all comes down to this moment. You need at least a triple to tie her, or three jokers to beat her. Anything else that comes up on those wheels, you would lose the game. You need all the luck you can summon right now, Phil. Let's see your spin.
Come on, B.
Joker!
So the Joker's Wild is back on now with Snoop as the host. Snoop Dogg presents the Joker's Wild now. But when the show was on in the 70s, Jack Barry was the host. And the thing that always got me about this show is that Jack Barry was part of the biggest game show controversy conspiracy of all time, which was the $64,000 question.
Which had a
scandal because they were giving the answers to one of the contestants that they wanted to have keep winning, because the more he kept winning, the bigger the ratings became. So they kept giving him the answers. It's a great Robert Redford movie that he directed called Quiz Show that's all about that. You check out that movie. So he was part of the biggest game show scandal of all time. And he comes back with a game show that's based on a slot machine. Which to me is, everybody, when they go to the casino, they think the slot machines are fixed. So how do you
end up? Yes, they are. Yes. I like the loose slot.
How do you end up getting another game show at all in the first place? And then it's based on a slot machine. Okay, so that's The Joker's Wild. Another one of my honorable mentions is Tic-Tac-Doe, which was similar to The Joker's Wild, but you had to answer questions and then you would get to put an X or an O up on the board and get Tic-Tac-Doe when you won it. So, and then my final honorable mention is another Chuck Barris show. I want to hear if you've ever heard of this show, Katie. It's called The New Treasure Hunt.
Oh,
ladies and gentlemen, this bonded security agent has just placed a certified check for $25,000 in one of these 30 surprise packages. Tonight, someone may win a fortune in fabulous prizes or that grand prize of $25,000 on The New Treasure Hunt.
The New Treasure Hunt. Do you remember that one at all?
Well, yeah. So was it okay? So this one, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's like 30 boxes, and they're like wrapped like Christmas presents or birthday presents. They're surprise packages,
right?
And there's money hidden inside of one of them, and women have to answer questions. And it was always women, right?
It was always women. They had a studio audience full of women. They would pull two contestants down to play the game every show, and they would pick a box. In the same way with Deal or No Deal, you pick a box and they bring it down, right?
Yeah, briefcase.
Right. So now you're picking
a
box.
Knockoff.
And then they would open the box, and then in the box there would be different. There would be different props, and then they would kind of end up doing this skit out of all the props. And then finally, at the end, it was the one I saw last night is they were pulling a rope, and they were pulling a rope, and at the end of it was an anchor, and she won a boat.
Ooh.
But sometimes there were zonks in it or bad prizes in it, but they always had that one that one box that had the $25,000 check in it, and then everyone would go berserk. So I loved that game. That's called The New Treasure Hunt. So Google that one.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's get to the top three of the Access TV list, and you will know all of these coming in at number three. And I will tell you that Steve Harvey does a fantastic job, but give me the Richard Dawson Family Feud every time.
Name something besides soap and a towel that people take with them to the bath.
A duck.
An occupation that uses... Stop the clock, please. Name a piece of clothing wives buy for their husbands.
Halter tops.
I know when my wife bought me my very first halter top. I think I can honestly look back now and say that's where our relationship started to drift apart.
Name an article of clothing that children are always losing.
Their pants.
The price of a dozen roses.
$1.75.
Besides a bird, something in a bird cage.
Hamster.
Did you want to get kissed by Richard Dawson, Katie Darrell?
He was a very handsy host, right?
He was. He would never be allowed.
He's got his hands all over everyone.
He was very handsy. He was a very, very handsy host, but it was a different time.
I think we used a clip in our episode when we showed, because Catherine Bach, you know, Daisy Duke from Dukes of Hazzard, went on the show once, and so she was talking about it on the episode, and so we pulled that clip, and you even see, yeah, I mean, Richard's hands are like, not just on her waist. I mean, he is bear hugging her.
Well, he was comforting her. She was nervous, and she's going for the big money. She's going for the big money.
Yeah, hashtag hands off.
All right, now let's go to number two.
Which star is it? Tom DeLuise. Karen Valentine. Vincent Price. Suzanne the Chef. Burt Reynolds. Carl Reiner. Wally Cox. Hope Lang. Or Paul Lynn. All in the Hollywood Square. And here is the master of the Hollywood Squares, Peter Marshall.
Opponents of fluoridated water argued that too much fluorine in a person's system can cause an uncontrollable desire for sex.
Hey, Colligan man!
That was the old Hollywood Squares. And
what I loved about this is that when I was interviewing Anson Williams, you know, Potsy from Happy Days,
yes,
he was talking about how he had been on Hollywood Squares. And he said the trick was they would shoot 5 episodes in one day. They would do 3 episodes, have a lunch break, and then they would shoot 2 more episodes. So it would be the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Well, at lunch, they would set out carafes of wine on all the tables. So people would get wasted at lunchtime and come back to shoot every Thursday and Friday episode. He said even today, make sure when you're watching the reruns, they'll play like all 5 of those episodes in a row. And by the time you get to the Thursday, Friday episode, you know, uh-oh, they got wasted at lunch on cheap wine.
They were a little loosey-goosey by the time it got to Thursday and Friday, huh?
Yeah.
It was so simple, but that, you know, but and all it was, it's just a setup for them to tell jokes. But boy, those Paul Lynn, and even today, I'm not really sure what Paul Lynn was ever in other than the Hollywood Squares.
Yeah. Famous for being on a game show, right?
Famous, exactly. For being on a game show. There are so many people, it's like, oh, okay, they're on game shows. And I'm fine with that. But they had great zingers. And let's see. So, Paul Lynn would always be in the middle. In the lower left, there was someone named, Charlie Weaver. And he kind of dressed up in like, almost like an old, like a Gilligan hat. But his real name is Cliff Arquette, and he is the grandfather of Rosanna Arquette.
And I didn't know that.
That was Charlie Weaver on the Hollywood Squares.
Interesting. See, now you're even educating me. That's, and that's one of the things I pride myself on is when you tune into
these shows on Access TV, whether it be the very, very best of the 70s or the top 10 revealed, I always say you get like some water cooler chit chat. Like, sure, it's fun, it's entertaining, it goes by really fast, but you also learn something. So all of a sudden, you know, you're in the elevator with someone or you're at the water cooler at the office and you pull out this fact and you just water coolered me right there.
Well, I'm glad I was able to do that. And another thing that's so fun about these shows is as you're watching it, like the first thing you think of, we go, oh, it's the top 10. And so you're immediately going, oh, okay, I know what number one is. I know what number one is. I have an idea what number one is. We've gone through the top 9. Have you figured out what number one is yet? The number one game show of the 70s?
A fortune in fabulous prizes may go to these people today if they know when the price is right.
Max's bid is $1,975 on her showcase. The actual retail price is $2,311, a difference of $336. You must be closer than $336 without going over to win, Wanda. Your bid is $2,600. The actual retail price is $2,598. You're over by $2. You're the winner.
And that was the pre-gray hair Bob Barker. That was the pre-have your pet spayed and neutered Bob Barker. She just won the showcase showdown, and I think it was $3,000 on that one, the entire thing. And then the one woman was over by $2. But again,
we
talked about this earlier. I think the reason that everyone loves these shows and they're so popular is that they're just so easy to play along with.
Yeah, I mean, at home, you're like, I know that a can of beans is 79 cents. And so, you know, you just get to yell at the TV. But what was up with Bob Barker's microphone, that long, skinny thing? Like, what was that?
It's the same microphone that Gene Rayburn had on Match Game. He had the super long Tootsie Pop microphone.
It's so weird. Like, where do you even get one of those? I mean, you know.
I know, but it's...
Guy, you have a microphone. You should request that in the studio. Be like, I want the Bob Barker.
It's a game show microphone. You have to have that microphone if you're hosting a game show.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. It is so fun. The game shows are so fun. The 70s are fun. I mean, just the flashback, the memories, the nostalgia. It's just, it takes you to a really good place.
The very, very best of the 70s. It's on Access TV. New episodes every Thursday, but it airs throughout the week. Set your DVR now to catch the next episode. Katie Darrell, thank you so much. If you please come back, because not only are you the host of the very, very best of the 70s, but you're also the host of the Top 10 Revealed. Which...
Yes, there's a music Top 10 show, and so we're always talking classic rock and stuff. So, yeah, I would love to come back and chat you up.
Please do. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Have a good night, you guys.
Thank you so much, Katie. Katie Darrell from Access TV, the very, very best of the 70s. Are you interested in what my top 10 70s game shows are? I'll tell you in just a minute. This is 720 WGN. 720 WGN coming into the home stretch with you this early Friday morning. Ken Smith with you. Thanks to Katie Darrell from Access TV as we're talking about the greatest game shows of the 1970s. Their list was 10 to 1. Let's Make a Deal, The Dating Game, The Gong Show, Name That Tune, Match Game, The $10,000 Pyramid, The Newlywed Game, Family Feud, Hollywood Squares, and their number one game show of the 70s was The Price is Right. Michael, producer Michael, are you interested at all in hearing what my top 10 list is?
I have been on the edge of my seat all night long.
I'm sure you have. That's because you've been on the edge of your seat to come in here and get pizza.
Well, that's true.
Okay, all right.
And that hot sauce was darn good, too.
The hot sauce was very tasty,
mm-hmm,
wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here is my top 10 list. Coming in at number 10 on my list is The Price is Right. It's their number one. It's my number 10. It's great because you play along with it at home. But when I think back to just specific memories about the show, I don't have specific memories about the show, just that it's fun to play along with. That was my number 10. Now, my number 9 is a show that didn't even make their list. It's called Password. It was hosted by Alan Ludden, who was married to Betty White, and it had two celebrities and two contestants. And so you would say a word, the guy would come on, and he'd go, the password is shoe. And then he'd go, okay, 10 points. And you give him a clue, and you go, laces. And a guy would go, basketball or whatever, football. And he'd go, no, 9 points. Feet, shoes, ding, 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 ding. So that's password.
Did you ever watch that Saturday Night Live sketch that they do that was the take on it with Kristen Wiig when she would come on and that big flamboyant actress? And then she'd be like, the word is peacock. Don't say peacock. And she'd be like, the word is peacock.
They would do that up and happen all the time on Password. All right, number eight is a show that some of you may or may not remember. They would bring somebody out of the audience. There were three comedians on stage. You sat there for 60 seconds for each comedian, and they would try and they would tell you jokes. And if you laughed, you lost. If you could keep a straight face and not laugh, then you won. The show was called Make Me Laugh.
Still have to face the unknown comic. Unknown comic, Jan Young.
Hey, your news. Someone stole all the toilets at a Los Angeles police station. Yeah, police have nothing to go on. Yeah, Governor Brown said he was going to drive all the prostitutes out of Los Angeles. And he's right. I saw him driving three to Las Vegas last week. Nixon told his wife he was thinking of going back into politics. She said, honestly, he says, well, I don't know about that.
Okay, so you have to sit there stone-faced. If they met, you got $1 for every second that you didn't laugh. So, like, that woman ended up winning, like, $97 before she cracked up. And if you went the entire 180 seconds, they would double your money. You'd end up with $360.
That was the grand prize? That was the,
yes, yes. Because they were pulling people out of the audience. And they had three stand-up comics that would try and make you laugh. All right. Number six is Make Me Laugh. On my list, number seven is Name That Tune. Name That Tune is on the air right now. It's called Beat Shazam. It's the exact same thing, except now it's called Beat Shazam. Number six did not make their list. The original Jeopardy. The original Jeopardy in the 70s. It goes back to the 60s. That host was Art Fleming. The dollar amounts were $25, started at $25 at the top of the board. And he would go, the answer is, and they would reveal it and would go clunk. And I loved that. My number five show is Family Feud. Number four, The Gong Show. Number three on my list, Hollywood Squares. Number two on my list is The Match Game. And the number one game show of the 1970s on my personal list, The $10,000 Pyramid.
Keep your eye on this spot. You're about to see June Lockhart and her partner in this circle trying to win $10,000 in less than a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the $10,000 Pyramid. Today's special guests are June Lockhart and Rob Reiner. And here is your host, Dick Clark.
Here's your first subject. Go.
Turkey, dressing, pilgrims.
Thanksgiving things.
Polly, what a cracker.
What a parrot says.
Yardstick, ruler.
Things you measure with.
Midgets.
Things that are short. Small things.
Cows, hay, loft.
Things at a barn, farm.
Rivers. Streams.
Things that flow.
Lost children.
Things that wander.
And the crowd goes wild. And the person giving the clues in that clip is Billy Crystal, the greatest $10,000, $20,000, $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 pyramid player ever. Held the record for the fastest win 27 seconds. We'll be back to wrap things up in just a second. 720 WGN.